So today I'm actually going to start this episode by making note that as we're recording this, and we always record a little bit earlier than we publish, Mark, you are gearing up for
7 weeks sabbatical.
Doing new dadhood.
Yep.
Doing some maybe book writing, hopefully not too much.
I just signed a contract today for the second one, so I probably should be. It's due in October.
Maybe just think about it.
I need to get some stuff going on it. So,
with that being said, there might be a few weeks here in the coming months that there might be, you know, a gap in our show where we don't release on a certain Wednesday.
Or you can invite somebody else to be a part of the invitation.
I mean, I've got so much else going on. I'm going to take the break if I can take it. But today I wanted to just, I had the thought this morning as we were talking a long time ago, at least it feels like a long time ago. It was realistically probably only 2 years. We started talking about mental health from the perspective of disappointment, failure, and loss, mm-hmm. and trying to conceptualize maybe some of, absolutely not all of, mental health struggle mm-hmm. is based out of disappointment, failure, and loss. Now, I want to be really, really clear from the offset. This is not saying that there are not other mental health struggles that don't fall under this idea. Mm-hmm. And this is primarily just a way of thinking about mental health that might bring more insight, but is not supposed to be the only lens that we're looking through.
Well, I think there's probably a differentiation that we're not talking about what is known, and I don't like this word, but what's known in the community as disorders versus struggles. Mm-hmm. Now, again, for those that are listening, a disorder is a diagnosable, you know, at least in the field. And again, you know, I know you and I have passions around, like, how do we remove some of that stigmatized language? But, you know, currently a disorder is something that can be diagnosed through the DSM-5, which is our Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Mm-hmm. And I think my frustration with all of that is that we don't talk about stuff leading up to those things. And mm-hmm. I think that's where the conversation around failure, loss, and disappointment can be life-giving, enlightening, mm-hmm. you know, because we're talking about things that if not dealt with or conversed about, then could lead to some disorders.
Well, I like what you're talking about too, because I think so often mental health becomes postvention or repairing or fixing or all of these things that are after, rather than being something that can be before, prevention.
Like, oh man, I fell off my second store balcony, but there wasn't a railing.
Right.
Oh, probably should put a railing up, but I'm in a body cast. Like,
right.
You know, no, prevention, that's postvention. Prevention is, hey, I've got a second story balcony. Probably should put a railing up.
Right. And I think, you know, some of this has to do with the origins of our field mm-hmm. being in the midst of institutionalization, where we had asylums, and that was where you put the crazy people that you didn't know what else to do with. So I think that societally, I can understand why we sometimes fall into this conceptualization of mental health, that it is supposed to be postvention. It's supposed to be you go to the doctor because you're sick, not because you're well and you don't want to get sick. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I hope that we are on a trajectory where we're able to have some more of those conversations. And I think there's some room for it, because even if you think about some of the jokes that particularly parents make of, like, okay, that's going into the therapy jar. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about, okay, that maybe was embarrassing or traumatic or whatever. And so we're going to jokingly talk about how we're going to put you in therapy to fix what just happened.
Right. Versus sitting down and talking about and fixing what just happened.
Right. But I think there's even some room in that conversation of, oh, well, maybe like we could do therapy as like a regular part rather than when the problems emerge.
Well, right. And that's the mindset shift. And I think when we didn't coin the failure, loss, and disappointment, mm-hmm. but we've been a big advocate of that. And I think when we start thinking it from that lens, it becomes a less of a boulder to mm-hmm. push uphill or a mountain to climb, or whatever stupid analogy you want to use. It becomes accessible.
Yeah.
because we could all relate to that moment of failure in our life, or that mm-hmm. moment of disappointment, or that moment of loss.
Yeah.
You know, and we joke about this, but for somebody that is really a perfectionist and they get their first B, it's, mm-hmm. you know, for the outside world, we're like, oh, come on, it's just a B. But for somebody that is really engaged in yeah. and likes that perfection, it's devastating.
Yeah.
And we can't minimize that because it doesn't make sense to us. And I think, you know, for those that are listening that are parents, it's really important that we don't put our own lens on mm-hmm. our children's definitions of failure, loss, and disappointment, because that could create some major issues.
Yeah, we all have different sensitivities to disappointment, failure, and loss. I was particularly sensitive to loss in friendships during mm-hmm. high school.
Right.
Throughout the years, it would either be a classmate that moved to a different school, or I was friends with seniors who would graduate, or friends that would move out of town. And those losses were significant to me in a way that they weren't for a lot of my peers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything super profound about me.
Sure.
It just means that I'm more sensitive to those sort of losses
right.
than maybe, you know, Jane Doe or Joe Schmo. And
interesting names.
Yeah. Totally real people.
Right.
And I think sometimes we get caught up in this idea that when we have those sensitivities, or when something goes awry or in a way that feels different than we would normally expect, that it's a problem or something's broken. And I can't tell you how many times I've sat with a client and just really tried to say, like, listen, you're not broken. You're right. not here to get fixed, because there's nothing broken to fix.
Yeah, where did that, maybe a tangent here and a conversation for a different time, but where did the language like broken come from?
Yeah.
I think that's so dishonoring.
Yeah.
Like, I think struggle or difficulty might be a better way of putting it, but
I think this is probably going to ruffle some feathers, but I would suspect that some of it comes from the evangelical movement where the language of broken humanity, or just that idea of brokenness, is pretty prevalent. I wouldn't be surprised if some of that seeped into our conversation and our way of thinking about ourselves, that we're broken people, because that's a common language in the evangelical community.
Yeah, very much so.
And at the same time,
think about for a minute, the language, like language creates culture,
mm-hmm.
right? And so maybe the intent of using that language was okay.
Yeah.
But look what it's done to generations of people that don't have any context for that.
Yeah.
You know, and shame creeps in, and, you know.
Well, and even for anyone whose feathers were ruffled by that idea, I would offer,
I'm sorry, it's okay that they're ruffled,
that language actually creates the culture of, I have to fix what's broken in order to come back to the relationship.
Right. Sure.
And that's not actually true, because you can't fix something in a relationship all on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Repairing rupture in a relationship is always a relational activity. It is never a solo activity.
Speak more.
In my marriage, I can't fix or repair or grow or heal anything in my relationship with my spouse all by myself.
Oh, gosh, no.
I need her because it's a relational wound.
So tell me what happens when you try.
You get nowhere and you get frustrated and things go awry. Like, it's not, I mean, you might be able to grow as a person, but that's you growing, you learning and repairing internally by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think even for, you know, a Christian or evangelical or Catholic community, this idea of brokenness can also lead us to a maladaptive approach to health.
Oh, sure. And I think I'd like to put not a pin in this conversation, but add to maybe our next discussion.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm realizing and I'm doing research on with just the loneliness piece is the impact of pornography,
mm-hmm.
Especially on men in the evangelical world. And so I'd love to come back to this conversation you know, more so about the fixing and the brokenness and the failure and all that kind of stuff. If we can next episode, because I think there's a lot that we can unpack there.
Yeah.
Just how we've got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to put a little teaser there. Come back next episode on that one, because I think there's some depth there that we can go.
Well, and even if we look at this idea of how is your emotional health, and that might be a better term than mental health, impacted by disappointment, failure, and loss.
Yeah, what is a better definition of, I think mental health creates that stigma too, and emotional health doesn't quite capture it.
Right.
So Trevor, we have a job. We've got to figure out a better word to engage that. And I know like Dr. Leaf has really tried hard to talk about mental ill health,
mm-hmm.
which helps.
Yeah, but it feels
a little cumbersome.
Yeah. I actually really like emotional health because our society doesn't talk about like emotions in the same way as we might think about intellect or physical ability.
Sure.
And so I think it speaks to that, but I agree with you. Like, I wish there was a better term for what you and I and other of our colleagues in the field of mental health understand to be true about humanity and our hearts and our feelings and our minds and how the wholeness of a person is impacted.
I should call it quantum health.
Oh gosh. Yeah. That's really going to draw people in.
But you think about it, that encompasses mind, body, and spirit. There's just got to be a better way. We've got to figure out something.
But if you think about how your emotional health, we're going to stick with that term.
Sorry, for a moment. Yeah, I'm over it. Bring me back in.
How is it impacted by disappointment, failure, and loss? Even in something like pornography,
mm-hmm.
what part of your drive towards pornography is actually a attempt to interact with the disappointment, failure, and loss that you've experienced in your life to recover from it, to grow from it, or to kind of soothe the hurt coming from it?
Soothe the hurt is the big one, I think. So my next book is roughly titled Finding the Beauty in Pain. Mm-hmm. And it's this idea that we tend to ignore, numb, or avoid difficult emotions.
Yeah.
And you've heard me say this, you say this,
mm-hmm.
There are no bad or emotions or good emotions. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just clear that up for a minute, because if we say there are good emotions by proxy, then there are bad emotions.
Right.
So just emotions.
Yep.
But I think a lot of the times we don't know how to sit with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if we're going back to our original topic of failure, loss, and disappointment, there's some rough edges with those. There's some depth to those that seems scary, that if we sit with that and go to that depth,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of like, we're not in the 3-foot side of the pool where we can stand up. We're in the 12-foot side where we're treading water. And like, how long could I sit here and tread water before I start sinking?
Yeah. And on the opposite end, this is something that someone actually pointed out to me recently. I have a tendency to lean into those harder, more painful emotions more frequently than I will the enjoyable, lighthearted emotion. Like, that's
totally
just my natural bent.
Well, mine too. Right.
And so I'm more likely to pull out of a situation what sucks in that, what hurts mm-hmm. in that, all of those things.
Let's talk about dirty things. Let's get messy. Let's get
right.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, this is awesome. Everything's great. Like, I am avoidant of that.
But I think that speaks to how we handle failure, loss, and disappointment. Go with me for a minute on this one. Because I think you and I are in some ways cut from the same cloth mm-hmm. in that. Like for my book that's coming out in September.
Yeah.
Like, people have asked me, well, this is a big feat. Have you sat and enjoyed it? And I'm like, no, I really haven't. I've got people like Dr. Daniel Amen and John Eldridge and Dr. Leaf and Kurt, you know, all these people that have really invested in writing an amazing review of the book. And I haven't sat with it.
Yeah.
And even as I sit here, I can feel myself kind of getting uncomfortable. Like, like, sit with this and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Be grateful. Be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Well, I do know, but I don't, you know, just for the sake of this conversation, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, why can't I be happy? And I think, I know for me, it's, I don't want to seem prideful. Mm-hmm. I don't want to seem egotistical. Look at me, look at me, look mm-hmm. at me. But am I doing that? And I know you're kind of the same way where it's like, let's just, like, even if it's just with my family or my close friends, just sit with this for a minute.
But I think that's, I mean, there are so many ways that we can get things wrong and right. And I think that if we just think about our relationship with disappointment, failure, and loss.
Oh, this like is, that relationship with, yeah.
This is, you know, you and I share a similar relationship with disappointment, failure, and loss, where we actually are not engaging with it as adaptively or as healthily as we probably could.
Mm.
Because maybe we're more likely to focus on the failures than the successes. Maybe we're more likely to focus on the disappointing thing than the really cool things.
Mm-hmm.
Or to experience loss more acutely and more severely than we're willing to accept change and new things. And some of that
or
can
good,
be
or good things.
Right. And some of that can be self-protecting. Some of that can be our moral and ethical ideals of how we should interact with the world.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's still something that requires reflection and intentionality to really understand, okay, I have a propensity to focus on failure more than success. Where do I go from here?
As you were talking, I'm just thinking through my own story. And I think part of the reason that I don't focus on the success and the joy and the happiness and the peace and exhilaration and whatever, you know, synonym you want to add there, I'm afraid that the other shoe's going to drop.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm afraid that that's all I get in this life is that one thing. And logically, I know that doesn't make any sense, but historically, you know, for somebody that was made fun of, beat up, bullied in middle school, you know, it became easy to be self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. It became easy to be the one that really made, because then it didn't hurt as much.
Right. You got ahead of it.
I got ahead of it. Right. And I know in some ways, you know, not completely, but that's somewhat of your story too, where it's, if I could be my own worst critic and my own worst enemy, then nobody else can hurt me.
You can run away, you can lean into, and there's so many things in between too. Right. I don't even know if it's a dichotomous spectrum. It's just it's a relationship with these ideas. And I'll repeat what I said in the beginning. This is not all encompassing, the idea of mental health.
No.
But for goals of self-development and reflection, maybe sit with the idea of what does disappointment, failure, and loss mean to me? What does it look like when I experience it? And how do I react?
Well, when we do that, then, like, that is simple and difficult all in the same statement. But when we do something like that, it paves the way to mitigate deeper issues of mental ill.
Yeah. Are you saying that we're doing prevention when we think about it that way?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it takes the surprises out of it.
Yeah. And suddenly you enter into an experience of significant failure. And
or glorious failure.
Yeah. And it doesn't take away from the ache, the pain, the sensation, the experience. But it does allow you to walk into that feeling more equipped, more prepared, more understanding of what's going on. And I think a lot of the times in our emotional and mental wellness, we end up being thrown off by unknowns more than what's actually going on.
Well, this is going to ruffle some feathers probably too, and I'm okay with that. But, you know, Brené Brown talks about the idea of failing and failing forward.
Mm-hmm.
And taking a look at this last year, I failed in a lot of ways this last year, 2020, right? But as I'm sitting here, we're recording this in the middle of April right now, or beginning of April of 2021, I can say that we failed forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the organization of Mayfield Counseling Centers is healthier than it's ever been as we sit here right now. But we had to fail to get to that point.
Yeah.
And it was not easy. And I've gotten, like, I saw myself in the photo the other day. I'm like, oh, my hair's turning white. It's like, you know, there's a lot of grayness that came with that and a lot of stress. But I think it's that mindset shift in the midst of failure, loss, and disappointment of going, okay, what am I learning? How am I growing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I messed up. I'll be the first to admit that. Nobody has to point that out to me, but I'm not staying there.
Right.
I'm not reveling in it. I'm not, you know, getting stuck. I'm learning from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the big key and big takeaway too, that can avoid or dampen or minimize a little bit the effects, the mental health effects or emotional health effects of those things.
Yeah, totally. Well, I hope you go forward from this conversation and you just think about your relationship with disappointment, failure, and loss. Mm-hmm. Reflect on how it's shown up in your life in the past, and maybe even how you would have liked to approach it differently so that you can prepare and do some prevention and move forward. And if it is something that you feel like you need another set of eyes on that aren't going to judge you for how you react in the past or think of you differently on how you're experiencing it now, I would highly encourage you to reach out to Mayfield Counseling Centers and just try to connect, even if it's just a 15-minute consultation to try to figure out what you need in a therapist if you're out of town, or trying to connect on, you know, one key issue.
Right.
Counseling also does not have to be this lifelong journey. It can be, but it can also be, you know, I'm going to go for 1 or 2 months, focus on something really diligently, and then move on.
Well, and if you're out of state and listening, you check out the Mayfield Collective, see our free content. And if you feel like it's valuable, you know, we'd encourage you to join. And we'll be releasing new content every month. And then give us some feedback on what you'd like to see. But also, there are great ways, and we talk about it quite a bit, on how to find a counselor in your area. And we can help with that as well.
Thanks for joining us.